Well, we're coming to the end of yet another week of working from remote locations for Political Rewind. This is week number 6 for us. And of course, I know many, many of you out there are working from home as well. Is this getting to be the new normal? I don't know. It's beginning to feel like it is. We've got a terrific show lined up for you today. Before I introduce everybody, a couple quick notes. Number one, we got great response from many of you out there who really enjoyed listening to Drs. Mark Rosenberg and Dr. Joshua Weitz yesterday talk about how this coronavirus behaves, what we need to make of the data sets we're getting from the state in terms of whether the virus is still on the march, whether it's diminishing in some ways. It was a really kind of a deep look at all of this, and I appreciate the fact that so many of you thought you got new information. I know I certainly did. Excuse me. I always want to hear from you. You can join our conversation by tweeting us at PoliticsGPB. You can email me at bnigut, B-N-I-G-U-T, at gpb.org. You can also watch us, well, you can really listen to us now on Facebook Live and post your comments in real time as the show unfolds. Lots of ways that we like hearing from you. All right, that said, let's get to today's lineup. First of all, it's Friday. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is with us. You read Jim in the Wednesday and Sunday papers, and he oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. Jim Galloway, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great today. I'm happy to see the week's end.
Yeah. I love the emphasis on today, because let's face it, we are all going through good days and not so good days as this unfolds.
And you try covering two Senate races, a presidential contest, and what, five or six primaries from a bedroom in Kennesaw.
I'm sure it is. Before we introduce everybody, there's one piece of political news that you just shared with me that I think we won't get into it any depth right now. But tell us what you just learned about advanced requests for absentee ballots.
Yeah. This comes from Ryan Anderson, who has that website Georgia Votes, which tallies all the all this voter data, and he is saying that nearly 760,000 requests for absentee ballots haven't been mailed into state and local election offices. That's a 2,998% increase over 2016. 760,000 ballots. Yeah, and only 890,000 votes were cast in that 2016 election. So you're talking about almost 7/8 of the electorate is already showing up.
I have not seen that yet. Has he broken it down by a request for party ballots?
This is the problem because you don't get that number until the ballots are returned to the voters, and processing has been very, very slow. You've got all these local election offices that are overwhelmed, in Fulton County in particular. They've had one election worker die of COVID-19, another hospitalized. So it's getting ballots out to people in time for a June 9 primary is going to be tough.
Okay, but to be clear, and then we're going to move on, when you request an absentee ballot, you do have to make a request for one party or the other, or ask for an independent ballot. You're just telling us that data doesn't become available until it's processed by the individual.
Right, exactly.
So I just want to make sure our listeners get that. All right, let's get on with our conversation today. I'm really thrilled about it. We're going to take a tour of the state of Georgia today with mayors from three important communities in our state. We're going to talk with Albany Mayor Bo Duro, who has done the show in the past. I introduce you first, Mayor Duro, in large part because the state has been so concerned about how the problems with COVID-19, the hotspot that your city and the county around you and a couple of the counties beyond have had with COVID-19. And we're very pleased to have you back today. And look forward in a few minutes to having you report on how things are going down there. But in the meantime, welcome, Mayor Duro.
Good morning, panel, and Bill, thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. Augusta Mayor Hardy Davis joins us today. We're really thrilled to have you, Mayor Davis. Tell us how you're doing just personally out there.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to be back. It's been a long time. We're doing fine over in Augusta, all things considered, when you look at the fact that we're testing and our confirmed cases continue to go up just like in other communities across the state of Georgia. We're reminding folks that we are going to continue to follow the governor's orders, but we want to make sure that we keep people safe. So we're doing everything we can to stay at home when necessary, shelter in place, and save lives. This is going to be a long haul here.
Yeah, I think we all realize that more than ever. Rusty Paul, the mayor of Sandy Springs, former chairman of the Georgia Republican Party and a longtime panelist on Political Rewind. We're glad to have you back, Mayor Paul.
Well, Bill, it's great to be back. I'm in familiar territory. I'm in my basement because we haven't reopened City Hall yet because we've had some virus issues there. So I'm in my basement where I spent 14 days in quarantine, just got back out. So I'm very comfortable here.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'd forgotten that you were in a position where you had to quarantine because of concerns about the virus making an appearance at City Hall. How did that go for you?
It was great for me, but my wife and the rest of the family wasn't very pleased about it. I mean, she would we have three floors, and she would take my food and lay it at the door and let me know it was there and then disappear, and I'd go get it. And then they brought a refrigerator, a microwave, and then I was on my own. So we did socially distance at my house.
All right. Let's talk about how all your cities are doing. And, of course, Mayor Duro, we need to start in Albany. Tell us where you stand now with the effort to slow the spread of the virus, how Phoebe Putney's medical system is doing in terms of available beds, in terms of medical staff, in terms of protective gear. Just give us a brief look at what's happening in Albany, Doherty, and surrounding area right now.
Well, Bill, the good news here is the number of new cases is decreasing pretty well consistently. It appears that between about March 29th and April 3rd was when we had our peak here in Albany, and that's, of course, it hit us here first, and maybe that's one thing to be thankful for. For the first time in several weeks, we have a few open beds in the hospital. That's another positive development. But to keep these trends going forward, we're going to have to continue to exercise the precautions that have been in place statewide, but actually were in place here in Daugherty County about 2 weeks before Governor Kemp issued the executive order on April 2nd. We're encouraged by these developments, but also, in an article that was published in the New York Times this morning, Albany, Georgia has, our metropolitan area has the highest number of confirmed deaths per capita in the country.
Yeah, we are so sorry about what your community is experiencing. I saw that article too, and my heart went out to you and the people of Albany and Doherty County. I did notice this morning that you had your restaurant owners met with city and health officials yesterday, I guess it was, to discuss where things stand with the community. Of course, the governor's order would allow restaurants to begin opening on Monday with very specific restrictions in how they would do their business. But it appears that many of your restaurateurs have said that they've decided to give the community more time to flatten the curve and take time to prepare for dine-in meals. And so it doesn't look like down in Albany, at least, you're going to get restaurants opening on Monday.
Well, there will be a handful of restaurants who are opening, and they're struggling. I understand that, Bill, but I was very impressed with the expressions of support from the restaurateurs yesterday. And quite simply, there were two reasons. The consensus was, we're not going to reopen until some medical professionals tell us we can do so without jeopardizing the health of our employees and customers. But secondly, they had not yet received the specifics of the from the state, which came out last night sometime after the close of business.
Let's go over to Augusta. And Jim Galloway, please jump in here as we go along. Mayor Davis, I'm not quite sure where the virus stands, how many cases you have right now, how your medical facilities are dealing with it right now. I do know in terms of the governor's order, I've read that many of the congregations, the denominations in Augusta, have chosen to stay closed for the time being because, again, a concern that in-person worship would create some real problems. So talk to us in general about the status of Augusta in regard to COVID-19.
Thanks, Bill. Again, we in Richmond County continue to see our confirmed cases go up. As of last night, our last count was 335 confirmed positive cases and 14 deaths. And as we see that, we know that we're still not out of the woods yet, and we're going to continue to put those practices in place in Augusta around social distancing, even with the phased reopening of businesses starting today. What I'm hearing from folks, both in the faith community, who, as I understand it, there's a planned press conference to once again reiterate that houses of worship in the faith community are going to continue to conduct services online. And also there will be some probably drive-up services. But for the most part, what I'm hearing, particularly in regards to the faith community, is that out of an abundance of caution, especially around early on, the governor indicating that much of the early outbreaks were predicated around funerals and or places of worship where you congregate in large numbers. And so folks are going to continue to keep doing what they've been doing, and that is live streaming, maybe some parking lot worship services. But for the most part, keeping people out of the congregations. I've heard some folks talk about not going back into the congregation for in-person worship until probably the end of May. I don't know if that's going to be the case long-term, but that's where we are. We're fortunate that the governor in his most recent executive order talked about Augusta University from a testing perspective. And so we see testing going up. Obviously, the big challenge across the entire state of Georgia is that we're not able to do sufficient enough testing. And with that challenge, you can have asymptomatic individuals who are in close proximity carrying the virus and you not know it. And I think that's where it's so important for us to continue to do the things, as Mayor Doro indicated. We had already put some things in place before the governor's shelter-in-place order around businesses and closing some things just so that we could begin to get our hands around it. And so we'll still maintain some of that, especially with regards to senior centers, libraries, and, of course, large gatherings. From a public standpoint, we're going to continue to keep those at bay for the time being. But we're making progress. I don't believe that we've reached our peak in talking with our hospital CEOs and the folks from the healthcare community. I don't think we've reached our peak in Augusta at this point.
Jim, Mayor, jump in.
Yeah. Mayor and Mayor Hardy and you others can jump in on this as well. The orders that Governor Kemp issued on Monday take effect today. Small businesses like barbershops, hair salons, tattoo parlors, and the like are free to open if they observe some of the guidelines, and all those guidelines are all predicated on access to personal protective equipment, masks, face shields, and such. I'm assuming at this point your healthcare facilities have access to that kind of equipment, but do small businesses have? Can they get hold of masks in the numbers that they need? Can they get hold of gloves in the numbers that they need?
Jim, that's a great question. I think there is concern about that. Again, I don't want to overstate this. We know that as we look across the state of Georgia and in communities like ours, we are maintaining our supply of PPE, and that's from a government perspective. We have masks, we have gloves, and obviously from a first responder perspective, those are things that you need in place. I don't know if those things exist in large numbers in the private sector, particularly with regards to going to the Lowe's, the Home Depot's of the world, but I hope so. I think that's probably one of the big challenges, that if we're going to have a soft opening, out of an abundance of caution, people need time to prepare and put those things in place. We certainly want to be helpful from a local government standpoint, but you're going to need those masks. You're going to need hand sanitizer, and we know that that stuff flew off the shelves. I know hospitals are challenged with PPE. In Augusta, you've got some local entities that are using 3D printing to develop face shields. They're also developing swabs now. But all of those things are where we find ourselves challenged right now, particularly in terms of the business community and their access to those things. So it still gives me pause. I'm yet hopeful and prayerful that we're going to be able to make our way through this over the next couple of days, and folks can stand their businesses back up in light of the governor's order.
Rusty, Mayor Paul, jump in here and give us a status report on your community. I have read that North Fulton County businesses seem to be reluctant to open their doors wide at this point. People are taking a wait-and-see attitude, but you can tell me about that yourself.
Well, I right after the governor made his announcement about the opening of gyms, I've got a Happy Talk email from my gym facility talking about how they were going to open up and all the plans and processes. And then last night, I got a much less Happy Talk saying, we think we rethought this and we'll probably wait a little bit before we open. Stay tuned. I don't see a real rush to a lot of business owners to go back in yet. I mean, it doesn't. I hate to say this as a politician and a community leader, but it doesn't matter what the president says. It doesn't matter what the governor says. It doesn't matter what the three of us say. Nobody's going back out and participate in the economy until they have a level of confidence that they can do so safely, and that hasn't happened yet. When the medical community tells them that okay, it's safe to go, then I think that's when the economy will open. And it's not going to happen because I or you or anybody else says, okay, you can go into business. The businesses are going to be driven by when their customers show up, and they're not coming yet.
You know, Jim, we've said on the show this week, even as we've reported back on the criticism that Governor Kemp has gotten from an awful lot of various fronts for his decision to reopen, we have said on the show, we sympathize with state leaders and certainly these mayors in terms of what's happening to their economies and to the people who live in their communities in terms of not being able to make a living. And we do sympathize and understand that they are in very difficult positions in terms of trying to look at the health and safety of their people and also worry about the long-term economic impact. But, Jim, you know, one of the things that's caused confusion, and I'm going to play it and then let you start a conversation about this, is once again last night, President Trump, having apparently 2 days ago having had a phone conversation with Governor Kemp, in which he signed off on the governor's effort to reopen things this week, for a second evening in a row at his briefing, went after Governor Kemp. Let's listen.
I want the states to open more than he does, much more than he does, but I didn't like to see spas at this early stage, nor did the doctors. Is that a correct statement, Deborah? I didn't like to see spas opening, frankly. I didn't like to see a lot of things happening, and I wasn't happy with it. And I wasn't happy with Brian Kemp. I wasn't at all happy because, and I could have done something about it if I wanted to, but I'm saying let the governors do it. But I wasn't happy with Brian Kemp. Spas, beauty parlors, tattoo parlors, no.
The reason I mention play that now, Jim, is, and I want to get to the mayor's response, but you can jump in, is the messaging seems so confusing. I'm not quite sure what to make of what I'm supposed to do next. And that's
absolutely
part of this real problem that all three of these gentlemen have.
Right, right. And look, this is the problem. You're getting a muddled message specifically out of the White House. I mean, we've got reporting this morning from the Associated Press that said and this is coming out of the White House, saying that Vice President Mike Pence and President Donald Trump had both given the green light to Governor Kemp over multiple days. And only when that U-turn occurred on Wednesday you know, you have a governor who essentially was sandbagged. But I think what has really caused concern in the White House among the public health officials is and Trump alluded to it, was the intimacy of the businesses that Brian Kemp was targeting. That, you know, if you're talking in terms of a pandemic, maybe it would have been better to go to allow businesses that might be considered more safe, that could have insulated customers from the virus more efficiently and easily. Maybe that would have been the better route to go than this first tier. I understand what Kemp was trying to do. He was trying to help business people who were seeing their livelihoods go up in smoke.
Mayor Durow, I want to turn to you on this because you pinpointed something that I suspect all three of you might share right now, and I'd love to get everybody to weigh in. But Mayor Durow, you said after this order came out, and I'm quoting you now, "Of greatest concern to me is the governor's direction that no local government may impose any restrictions which are more strict or less strict than the statewide mandate." So do you feel as this you're being hamstrung now in terms of anything you might want to add to as the community reopens a bit?
Yes, Bill. I mean, I understand the predicament the governor's in, and we can talk about that in a minute. I mean, our pension fund, we're hearing now it could lose as much value as it lost in 2008. And there are financial concerns for everybody. But the fact is, Albany and Daugherty County remains a hot spot. And the governor, having delayed statewide action under the theory that local governments are best equipped to address the situations in their localities, has now prevented us from taking these measures. But I just don't think that's fair. It's certainly not certainly not consistent. But the truth of the matter is, here in Albany and Daugherty County, people are concerned about their safety. And I can give you some numbers. We can talk about them later. In some of these other counties, let me say, Muskogee, 256 positive, 4 deaths. Bibb County, 234 positives, 5 deaths. Chatham, 199 positive, 6 deaths. Those communities aren't facing death and illness as we are in Daugherty County. So our citizens, like I said, the restaurants aren't going to open up. Most churches aren't going to have services. But I do think we should have been allowed to have the authority to enforce restrictions that even when the governor started to reopen the state economy.
Mayor Paul, you were on CNN the other night and said you were basically supportive of the governor's decision. Does that include feeling that it's okay that he has the right to tell local communities like yours you can't impose more restrictions?
Well, what I said on CNN was that I understood the dilemma that the governor is facing, and for the first time in 40 years, I'm glad I'm not the governor because this is very difficult. And I think maybe the governor could have consulted with another Georgian former Congressman Tom Price about dealing with the president and the challenges of getting consistent messages. But our position in Sandy Springs is, one, we're going to implement the governor's order with caution, with a priority on safety and public health. We are not going to hesitate if we find businesses that are not complying with the social distancing, the sanitation, and all the other requirements that are in that order, that we will have no hesitancy about shutting them down. I think the governor's order gives us that capability. I've seen nothing to the contrary. We're going to take a measured approach, and as I said, priority one is going to be health and safety. And if these businesses that do open don't comply with the requirements, then they're not going to be open very long.
Mayor Davis, you have certainly, I assume, seen Michael Thurman, CEO over in DeKalb County, respond to what the governor said about local cities not being able to add their own restrictions. He said, well, I may not be able to order anything, but I essentially can advise further. I can advise how people ought to be looking at behaving. They ought to wear masks everywhere they go. They ought to take various sanitary measures. He's essentially circumventing what the governor has demanded here, but doing it pretty clearly as a message that it's time for people to step up and constrain their behavior, Mayor Davis.
Well, I too share that concern. I think Mayor DeRoe just said it best, that early on, the governor yielded to the local communities because we know our communities best. We're on the ground. We have the temperature of our cities. And to find ourselves at this place now, to be effectively hamstrung from, again, working one in concert with the governor as it relates to his executive order, but also more importantly, knowing our communities, I think does provide somewhat of a, you know, challenge for us. And again, we're going to do everything we can to work in concert with our governor. I think it's important to have uniformity across the state and thus, you know, the governor's executive order. But when you look at border communities like mine, South Carolina is joined to us by the river. As of last night, we had roughly 800 positive cases across the CSRA, which includes South Carolina. This morning, that number is going to approach more like 900, again, almost 1,000 cases. And that right there becomes a real problem for us because the majority of those folks are coming into Augusta, coming into Richmond County. They're shopping. They're doing things. When you talk about hair salons and stylists and those things, they're coming to Augusta to do all of that. And so it puts additional pressure on us in order to try to manage our community and certainly from a healthcare perspective, being able to manage that, notwithstanding the fact that you've got folks who are being brought here from other communities to get treatment and to get intensive care because of the resources we have from a healthcare perspective. So I see what CEO Thurman has done. I certainly applaud him in his efforts to, one, work in concert with the governor, but more than anything, I think what you saw Mike Thurman do was say to the community, you trust me, these are the things that we're going to do. We're going to open, but we're going to do it in a very deliberate approach. We're going to be intentional and thoughtful about that, and I think that's where, you know, I'm hearing from Rusty and from Mayor DeRoe as well, that we're going to be intentional about this, but that intention is with human life in mind.
Jim?
Yeah. Just a question to the mayors as a whole. If we could start off with Mayor Paul on this, you know, one thing I've, and if you'll allow me to plug my Sunday column, it's already up and it's on Keisha Lance Bottoms and Thurman kind of engaging in government by persuasion because they've been cut out of formal authority over pandemic measures. But Mayor Paul, one thing that interesting that Michael Thurman is doing is he has set up a hotline and he is insisting that employees who are called back to work, if they find out that their employers aren't following the guidelines, they are supposed to report them. And that's when he will come in and send DeKalb County police to investigate. Is that where you're headed?
I think that's similar to what our approach is going to be. We're still waiting on a little bit of guidance about who is actually in charge of enforcing all this. You know, are they relying on us at the local level to be the enforcers? I haven't gotten a clear answer on that yet, but I'm sure that guidance will be coming. But in essence, yeah, we don't have to set up a hotline. All I have to do is check my email because people have already been reporting situations where they think that the proper procedures are not being followed. And we've sent code enforcement out to check into some of these. The police department's a little reluctant because they know that some of the things that we had in our original closing, you know, we were one of the first cities to shut things down. They were concerned about, you know, could they be prosecuted in return for certain things. But with code enforcement, it's real simple because business licenses, when they sign up for business licenses, they say they're going to abide by our ordinances. And we have a little bit more authority in that area, and we can revoke those licenses if they are not following the right procedures. And we intend to. We hope that people will open up and follow what the governor has said to do. But our biggest concern isn't what businesses are opening. Our concern is what businesses will never open again. We've surveyed a lot of the businesses in our community, and we have as many as 25% of them say they will never open again. And so our big concern is what's going to be the long-term economic implications, and I know that's what the governor's concerned about too. And so we all got to work together to try and figure out how to make this work and salvage as much as we can without putting people at unnecessary risk.
All right, I need to jump in because we got to get to a break, but I want to pick up on exactly what you just talked about, Rusty Paul, and talk to all of you about the economic impact of this virus on how your cities are going to try to recover in the months ahead. But before we do that, let's take our first break of the show. You're listening to Political Rewind. I'm joined today, of course, by Jim Galloway of the AJC and also three mayors across Georgia, Augusta Mayor Hardy Davis, Albany Mayor Bo Duro, and Sandy Springs Mayor Rusty Paul. If your mayor is not among this group, and most of them aren't, you should know that in the weeks ahead, we're going to really check in with mayors across Georgia so we can get more focused on each of your or many of your communities across the state. Mayor Davis, Rusty Paul talked about the concern that the governor has, rightfully, about what happens to the economy in the months ahead. I want to ask you about what kind of hole Augusta is getting itself into because of this, but also add to that we know that there's a new proposal on the Hill for yet another relief package. Democrats in the House are pushing it hard to send money to states and cities. Right now, that package is being held up by Majority Leader McConnell in the Senate. And unfortunately, his team issued a statement that really created a partisan aura around this by saying they don't want to give relief to Democrats who are looking for handout money. But how important is it going to be for you to get help from the federal government, first the state, and then money for the city itself?
Well, it's going to be incredibly important. I think when you look at what we're finding ourselves in this pandemic, it's significant from an economic perspective. When you look at Augusta, Georgia, every year the whole world shuts down and comes to our city during the first week of April. That didn't happen. There's an economic impact that's associated with that. And we're certainly hopeful that in November we may have a tournament that didn't take place. But just that economic impact alone as it relates to that is in the millions of dollars in terms of its effect on Augusta. And so from a sales tax perspective, we see declining revenue. When you look at our hospitality and tourism industry, we're seeing a decline in revenue because restaurants are only take out or drive up the service. And so all of those industries are affected. Hotel beds, they are not being used. So there's a substantial economic impact. We've got events that were going to take place in the city that the city would be hosting to the tune of about $3.2 million between February and June, and those things aren't going to happen. And so there's a broad, you know, impact from an economic standpoint, notwithstanding the Masters Golf Tournament. What we've seen in Congress, and we've certainly been engaged, I know Rusty has as well, through GMA, and certainly probably Mayor DeRoe as well, we've been engaging our federal partners about what we want to see in these stimulus packages. The most recent one that was signed was one where they had a population threshold of 500,000 or more. In Georgia, there are only four counties that meet that threshold. across the nation, there are only 37 cities that are 500,000 or more, and Atlanta is not one of them. And so when you look at that and then understand that there's this aversion to sending monies directly to the local communities, which is where we meet the needs of people, which is where government is closest to the people, I think we're challenged. And so we're going to continue to work with our federal partners. We hope to see some relief as it relates to that, Jim. I'm not sure that it's coming because of the now partisan divide around, you know, getting these resources to the people that need it the most, and that's the folks on the ground.
Mayor Durow, you referred earlier to your concern being about how many of the, say, restaurants, for example, other businesses are going to reopen at all. What kind of debt are you facing? What can you put some numbers around how badly the city's budget is being hurt by this?
Yes. Can I say two things, though, Bill, before I answer the question?
Sure.
First, speaking to what's going on in DeKalb County, we passed a resolution this morning unanimously, the city commission did, requesting, imploring citizens to continue to shelter in place and asking businesses not to open until we have met the benchmarks. But secondly, I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the invaluable assistance we've received from the governor in the way of equipment, supplies, medical teams. But I do know the state decision, the governor's caught between the devil and deep blue sea. I'm sure state income tax, corporate income tax flatlined, and I know from what's happening here in Albany, sales tax collection is plummeting. That's one thing. We look at the numbers, it's frightening. Mayor Davis mentioned it. Hotel, motel tax, no revenue whatsoever. Sales tax collection, as I said, plummeting. But on the other side of that, the city of Albany has its own utility, and we have made the decision not to disconnect any customers during this period of time. And so our bad debt is mounting up rapidly. It's frightening. It really is. And then I mentioned earlier, Bill, the issue of the city's pension fund. It's we don't know where that's going to go.
Hey, Jim, the majority leader suggested the other day that if states want relief, they ought to file for bankruptcy. That was met by both Republican and Democratic governors with a resounding criticism.
Yeah, it would. One thing, it would. It on the Democratic side, that's kind of viewed as a union busting tactic, given that public employees are now pretty much the kind of the dominant force in the union market. It's also, you know, Democrats are also kind of pointing to Kentucky. The Kentucky draws down, I think, the second highest rate per capita of federal dollars of any state in the union. So it's not exactly speaking from the moral high ground.
Okay. Hey, Rusty Paul, in fact, this is for everybody, but let me just start with you, Rusty. Of course, we are now doing Political Rewind live at 9 in the morning, and the encore presentation is at 2 in the afternoon. So some of you will be hearing this afternoon. But Rusty, the AJC this morning has just moved a story. The headline is Lines Start Early for Haircuts as Georgia Begins to Reopen. They needed a trim and couldn't wait any longer. For the first time in a week, some Metro Atlanta hair salons and barbershops reopened Friday, and the line started early. At Peachtree Battle Barbershop in Buckhead, customers waited in line shortly after 7 a.m. At Studio 151 in Dallas, the first appointment was at 6:30 in the morning. This is a report filed by Alexis Stevens of the AJC. So maybe you should go out and get out there in Sandy Springs, look around to see what the lines are like, Rusty.
Well, when I was in college, the biggest disagreement my father and I had was about the frequency of my haircut. And I'm going retro. So I hope everybody's following my lead and following my example. You can see me on Facebook, but nobody else can. And I'm getting a little shaggy. You know, but that's a small price to pay for keeping everybody healthy. And we have to keep in mind that the number one goal here is to maintain the health and safety of our people. And, you know, if my graying locks get a little bit longer, I'm not going to be that disappointed. But let me also address the budgetary impact. We are in our budget process. Our fiscal year starts July 1, and we're in the process of developing the budget, and we're operating on an assumption that our revenues are going to be at least 30% lower than what they have been. And I've told the council that we may have to pass several budgets over the course of the next several months because we're really just guessing what the impact of revenue is going to be. We know it's going to be down. We know it's going to be substantial. And we've just kind of pulled some numbers out of the air saying a third, but it may even be worse. And so, and this is going to happen at governments at all levels. I've seen estimates that the state budget revenue may be down $4 billion. That's another 25% in a budget where 85% of the expenditure goes to education and health care. So it's going to be a very challenging budgetary process for governments at all levels because we are tied directly to the economy. We don't get any revenue unless there's an economic transaction somewhere, and the economic transactions have evaporated, and it's going to have a long-term effect on the delivery of services at the local, state, and federal level.
Yeah, I think, Mayor Davis, it's becoming clearer and clearer to people. You know, for a while there, I think in March, when people started, like Rusty Paul in Sandy Springs, started shutting things down a little earlier than other communities. We thought, well, we're going to be sheltering in place for a few weeks. We're going to keep businesses closed. Mayor Davis, it's beginning to appear that we're not getting back to business, certainly until, I mean, when? June? July? Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's true. And again, I think, you know, again, we're all very sensitive to the challenges that our governor faces. The reality of it is, whether you're at the state or local levels, we're concerned about the same things, and that's the health, welfare, and safety of all of our citizens. That requires us, from a service delivery standpoint, to be able to do that, and you've got to have revenue in order for that to happen. And so in this season of declining revenue, or in some instances where you're not going to see businesses come back, what we can do is make sure that we are healthy, we're safe, and at the point in time that over this long haul, as people are getting back into the workforce, we can make sure that government's prepared to be nimble and support businesses and moving as many regulations out of the place for people to move as expeditiously and quickly as possible. We don't have a timeline. I want to remind all of us that are listening in and those of us that are participating that the three T's are tantamount to success for this issue, and that's number one, testing. We're not able to do sufficient enough testing across the state of Georgia right now, or across this nation, in fact. Some scientists tell us that we should be doing at a minimum 5 million tests a day. And here in Georgia, we're working towards being able to do 6,000 tests a day. The second piece is contact tracing. All across the state, we have to be able to do that in significant numbers. And then thirdly is the issue of treatment. We don't have a vaccine. There's no cure for the coronavirus. At best, you know, we're medicating. We're letting folks' bodies' immune system get stronger over a period of time, and then we're releasing them back out. And so those are challenges that we're going to continue to face at least for the next several months at a minimum. And then, of course, you've got the parallel argument around is there going to be a second wave? I think what we can do in Georgia, and I hear my Bulldogs consistently saying this, even though I'm a Yellow Jacket, is to hunker down, dogs. Well, this is an opportunity for us to kind of hunker down a little bit and say that we're going to continue to practice these things around social distancing, sheltering in place when necessary, washing your hands, keeping hands out of face. And now we're adding that second piece to that, or third piece, and that is put a mask on. If you go out in the general public, put a mask on and do not congregate in groups larger than 10. And so I think
Mayor
that's
Davis,
the normal.
I'm sorry, I got to cut you off because I've got to get to a break. But I know, Mayor Duro, you've got to move on because you've got a pretty busy day. Is there any couple of last words from you before you have to leave us, and then we'll get to our break?
Yeah, Bill, thank you. Those numbers I mentioned earlier in Muskogee, Bibb, and Chatham County, I think they're really a testament to the success of the shelter-in-place order that was entered on April 2nd. We don't need to lose sight of that. But what I wanted to mention, if you don't mind, the number of cases we have in Sumter, Lee, Mitchell, Early, Terrell, Thomas, Randolph, Worth County, in southwest Georgia, we've got well over 100 deaths in these other counties in this region of our state. People need to understand that once this virus, if and when it hits hard, in this report from the New York Times, it says Gainesville is a potentially a new, could be a hot spot. This thing will proliferate and metastasize into surrounding counties. We have to be vigilant. And I just don't think now's the time to reopen the economy, but please, people, continue to exercise these precautions, protect yourself and others. But thank you for having me, Bill, and I appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Mayor Durow, thank you so much for being with us. We wish you and the people of your city well in the weeks and months ahead. Let's do this. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way. Then Mayor Davis, Mayor Paul, and Jim Galloway, and I'll be back. Talk a little politics. You're listening to Political Rewind. All right, Galloway, here's a caution for you. Tom Faust just told me we have like 7 minutes left in the show, so we're only going to have so much time to talk about this. But here's my two questions to kick us off. What the heck is happening between Brian Kemp and Donald Trump? And second, what is poor Kelly Loeffler to do? Caught between the man who appointed her and the man whose support she so desperately needs.
Yeah, it is. It is. It has become one of the more interesting soap operas in the country at this point. Here's a working theory, and I'd like to hear Mayor Davis and Mayor Paul get kind of sounding. I think on Wednesday, the Wednesday White House briefing, Donald Trump flipped on Brian Kemp. AP, the CNN, and a bunch of other news outlets are reporting pretty reliably that this was a matter of the public health officials getting very, very nervous of what's happening in Georgia and persuading Donald Trump to reverse himself. That was Wednesday. Last night was another matter. I think President Trump has a penchant for. Even when he reverses himself, he goes all in, and I think Thursday's comments was a revival of the Kelly Loeffler Doug Collins drama, I think, from last year.
Well, let's go to Rusty the Republican on this first.
Well, she probably felt like she was out for a Sunday morning stroll and walked into the OK Corral and the Earp brothers just came around the corner. But there's an old adage in politics. It's an old joke, and it may apply in this situation where a politician had a very hard dilemma, and he said, some of my friends are for it, some of my friends are against it, and I stand firmly with my friends. And that may be the only answer and option she's got.
Mayor Davis, there is a part of me that thinks that the president is getting an opportunity here to use Brian Kemp as a target to deflect some potential criticism from his talking all the time about opening the economy. Now he has a new person to go after, so it appears that he, in fact, is Mr. Caution.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly true, Bill, but I think that there's another factor that's at play here, and that is I think the president positioned himself in a way that if things go bad in Georgia, he can walk away from Governor Kemp. I think that's disappointing to see us at that place, particularly when I think that there's been an aligning from a partisan standpoint in support between the governor of Georgia and our president. Rusty says that I'm with my friends. Well, if I'm with my friends, I'm with my friends even in the good and the bad times, and that's certainly not the case in this example here. When we talk about the Senate race that's likely going to happen, Doug Collins is a friend of mine, has been a friend for a long time, and so this certainly creates an opening for him, but at the same time, I think that there are other candidates who will have opportunity to lift their voices during all of this back and forth here. One candidate in particular is Ed Tarver, who's got a unique opportunity. He's got an impeccable record of service. He's running in that race as well, and he certainly is not getting the press that some of the folks in Atlanta area are. But I would consider him to be a dark horse in this race over here in Augusta, and Obama appointee spent 8 years as a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Georgia. And I'd encourage folks to take a good look at him. And then, of course, in that other Senate race over there, you've got former Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, who just got two big endorsements from Martin Luther King III, and then, of course, Valerie Jackson, the widow of Maynard Jackson. So there's some stuff at play here in terms of candidates and certainly politics in the state of Georgia. You've got two Senate races that are coming to bear very quickly with the shifting of the elections, and now you've got some opportunities for folks to kind of lift their voices and say, hey, don't forget about us over here. Teresa Tomlinson and Ed Tarver.
Jim.
I'd like to compliment Mayor Davis on how carefully he slipped those endorsements in. That was magical.
Yeah, I do too. But Jim, beyond making those endorsements, he pointed to another factor that we always have to consider in statewide races. He talked about an Ed Tarver and a Teresa Tomlinson, neither of whom at this point is running out of Metro Atlanta, and he points out how difficult it is to gain attention the way that candidates in Metro Atlanta can, and that is an ongoing problem for those candidates.
Right. And in both cases, the Metro Atlanta candidate, in one race, Raphael Warnock, the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist, and the other one, John Ossoff, who ran against Karen Handel in 2017, both of them have the financial advantage. So there's something to be there's something to be said for that. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
All right, we are completely out of time. Rusty Paul, I was going to give you a chance to make the endorsements you want to, but I'm sorry, we'll have to do that on another show because I've got to get out of here.
All right,
well, you know I will. You know you're always welcome. And Mayor Davis, you've got to come join us more often for Political Rewind as well. Thank you both for being here today. And Jim Galloway, thank you too. I've got to leave my studio here in my house in Decatur, get downstairs and change out some laundry, because that's what I'll be doing the rest of today. All of you out there, please have a safe weekend. Take care of yourselves and come back to us healthy for Monday's Political Rewind. We'll see you all then.